real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and just happy to be talking about leadership today. It's a passion of mine, and I hope it's a passion of yours as well. What does it take to be an effective and respected leader? Does it come naturally to most people? Well, our guest for today believes that there are some important skills that leaders need to learn right away in order to use that place of influence well. Let me tell you a little bit about him, and we'll get him on the show. Dr. Hans Finzel is an author, a speaker, and a trusted authority in the leadership field. He's the author of 10 books, including the international bestseller, The Top 10 Mistakes Leaders Make. He has a doctorate in leadership studies from Fuller School of Intercultural Studies. He's also a globally respected teacher. After serving 20 years as president and CEO of World Venture, Hans now leads the nonprofit training ministry HD Leaders. He and his wife Donna have 4 adult children and live in Colorado. Hans, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be on the show with you today.
Well, I always love talking leadership because it seems like everyone is either a leader or has been led by a leader in some way, shape, or form. And we all seem to have our opinions on which of those leaders have led us well. Do you find that to be true?
That's absolutely true. I define leadership with one word, the word influence. So anytime you influence anybody else, you're leading them. And yes, we've all had experiences, positive and negative, about leadership, which sort of forms our opinion. And also, if you were to ask 100 people what is the key to great leadership, you'd probably get 100 different answers.
Well, I found that as well. There are people with very strong opinions that you either have the skill set to be a leader or you can't even develop it. But as I read through your book, there are some skills that anyone can learn if they want to be an effective leader, aren't there?
I think so. You know, people ask me, are leaders born or are they made? And I say the answer is yes, both. You know, and many of the great leaders in the world, in history and today, were maybe not necessarily born great leaders, but they learned to be great leaders. And I think it's more important what you learn than what you're endowed with from your birth.
Well, I have found that I have some friends, for example, who are so good at listening. Those are the friends that, of course, are top of mind when something's going on in my life and I want to give them a call because I know they're going to listen and be heard and not talk about themselves instead. So I was thrilled to be able to see at the beginning of your book, Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader, you talked about listening. So tell me a little bit about listening. Do you think poor listening is becoming more of a generational issue when it comes to leaders, or is it just something that people aren't necessarily great at?
I think it's a society. I don't think it's generational. I think it is societal. It's what I call the growing noise of social media is drowning out people's ability to listen. And it is true, the younger generations who are so into the constant social media, it becomes more difficult to listen. How many times have you been talking to somebody and all of a sudden they look down at their cell phone,
mm-hmm.
and they quit talking to you and they start talking to their cell phone or punching their cell phone? And it's kind of rude, isn't it? But it's just kind of the way society is. So I just think we're living in a very stressful, fast-paced world where the growing noise of social media is making it more and more difficult to have that human connection. And the L in leadership stands for listen and learn. So you do have to learn to be a good listener, to be a good leader.
It does seem like that face-to-face interaction, at least from the people who have been my leaders, is just so essential and really makes me feel like I'm important and like they want to hear me. Things sometimes get in the way, though, don't they, for people who are leading? Like maybe they have too little time or maybe they have too many people to manage. How do they get around that?
Yeah, that is a problem in leadership. The higher you go in leadership and the more people that you're responsible for, the harder it is to listen because, yeah, you've got so many people, you have so many responsibilities, tasks. So it increasingly becomes difficult to focus. And what I did, I was a CEO for 20 years, and I had a lot of people under me and in the work. And one thing I realized is it was one of my main responsibilities to pay attention to my team, the direct reports. I couldn't spend time with everybody that wanted a chunk of me, but I found it really important to give personal time to the people that were on my team, my direct team.
Well, is there a magic number of a number of people that a leader can handle versus having too many people reporting to him or her?
I'm glad you asked me that question, Joe, because when I became the president of our ministry, I had 14 direct reports, and that's unmanageable. And I remember after about 5 or 6 years, my board said to me, Hans, you've got to cut down the number of direct reports, and I eventually got down to about 6. I think that's a good, I think that's a good manageable number, 6 people. I think 12 or more is not manageable. It's too many people.
Mm. Well, you do write that nothing stops the progress of an organization more quickly than a leader failing to listen. Can you talk more about that and how it may harm an organization if that leader is a poor listener?
Well, think about how you feel if your leader doesn't listen to you. You feel marginalized, you feel unimportant, you feel disrespected, you feel like it doesn't matter what I think, nothing's going to change. It just really marginalizes people when a leader doesn't listen. And if I flip that around, how do you feel if you go into your leader's office and they really do hear what you say? Well, you feel like a human. You feel respected. You feel important. You feel like, wow, I have something to say here, and my leader respected what I had to say. It totally changes the whole equation. So when I speak to audiences, I always ask the question at the beginning of my talks, how many of you worked for a terrible boss? And most everybody raises their hands. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
And then when I ask them, well, what made them so terrible, this is one of the couple things that always comes up. My boss refuses to listen. And it's one of the signs of a miserable job or a miserable boss.
So it does seem that when people feel like they've been heard, then they're going to maybe give that leader a little more respect or at least know that they can come to them if they have something that's bothering them. I found that maybe the worst thing is to have things pent up and not be voicing them to the person who's supposed to be leading you and then having them all explode at one time.
Yeah, people actually get angry at the boss if the boss refuses to listen. And the longer that is unresolved, the more toxic it becomes, and they become disrespectful. The next thing you know, they're talking behind the back of the leader, against the leader. Sometimes I would have people say to me, Hans, you're not a very good listener. And I would say, why do you say that? I'd like to know. And sometimes it was because I didn't do what they suggested I do. And I don't think that's what true listening is. Listening is really hearing what the people had to say. And so I developed the practice of saying back to people, here's what you shared with me, right? Yes, right. That's my concern. That's my input. That's my opinion. And then I might say afterwards, oh, I appreciate it. You know, I'm not sure we're going to go that direction, but I do appreciate your input, and I hear what you have to say. And most people just want to be heard. Mm. They don't expect the boss to always do what they suggest. Mm. So that's good listening.
Well, and you also mentioned the word leader. The L also stands for learning. So why should a leader be invested in their own learning when it seems like they should be investing in the learning of the other people that they're leading?
Well, because we live in a changing world. And in times of change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. And because the world, or no matter what industry you're in, those of you who are listening, no matter whether it's business, education, law enforcement, legal, ministry, everything is changing. And so a leader has to keep learning in order to be able to lead in this year, in this current state of the situation. The worst kind of leader is a person that thinks they've arrived and they're perfect and they got their education and they know everything they need to know. If you stop learning today, you will stop leading tomorrow. That's my opinion.
So what are some ways that leaders can constantly be learning? Because you're not just talking about their industry, but learning how to be a good leader, right?
Yes. Well, the number one way is to read my books, of course. But I do think seriously that, doctors and people in the medical profession and educators, they have to constantly be recertified. And sometimes I wish leaders had to be recertified. I think you should read books about leadership, listen to podcasts about leadership, go to a conference or watch some videos on. If you've been given the responsibility of leadership, you should work on that skill and improve it. So it could be reading, it could be listening to audiobooks, it could be conferences, it could be podcasts. There's so many. I have 75 of my own podcasts on my website that people can listen, choose a topic and listen to it. So improve your skill if you are in a position of leadership.
Well, and sometimes the learning is learning about ourselves, isn't it? You mentioned EQ, emotional intelligence, being a very important part of being a leader, understanding why we act the way we do. Talk a little bit about how it is that people can increase their EQ in order to be a more successful leader.
Yes, the E in leadership stands for emotional intelligence. And for so long, our society pretty well said your IQ will determine how successful you are. And now we know it's EQ is more important than IQ. EQ is emotional intelligence, and that's emotional intelligence is your ability to perceive yourself the way others perceive you. And it's the soft skills, your relational skills, your people skills. How do you act when you're under pressure? How are you at conflict resolution with other people? All that is emotional intelligence. And study after study has shown that success in leadership has so much more to do with your EQ than your IQ. And when I call references, if I'm going to hire somebody to work for me, and I call a reference, I'm not going to ask that reference how smart the person is. I'm going to say, tell me about their people skills. Tell me how they act under pressure. Tell me about their conflict resolution skills, their relational skills. So that's emotional intelligence.
Well, you did write, I quote, I confess during my years as a CEO, I was not in touch with my EQ as well as I should have been, and that led me into some tough waters. So what was it that happened that finally convinced you, ooh, I might have some work to do here?
Yeah. You would have to bring that up, wouldn't you?
Well, you wrote it. I just brought
yeah,
it up.
True. I hate it when people quote my books back to me. Well, I was actually confronted by a couple of my team members and about my some of the things I was doing that was not garnering trust in them. And so it was a tough thing. But see, I had some blind spots about how I was coming across and some of the things I was doing as the leader. And blind spots are just that. You can't see them until somebody tells you about them. And even though it was hurtful when I was confronted by this particular individual, guess what? They were right. And what they said about my leadership and some of the things I was doing, they were absolutely right, as painful as it was. And so I was able to deal with that because this truth teller in my life who had the courage to come to me helped me clear up a blind spot. So that's the experience I had. And even though it was painful, it made me a better leader.
Well, I'm talking to Hans Finzel today. He has a new book out called Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader. We do have a few of these books to give away. Both David Cook Publishers and Hans have contributed those to our show, and we'd like to get those in your hands. If you would like to get your hands on a copy of Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader, send an email to us. You can go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith and submit your information that way, and we'll do a drawing at the end of the show. We'll be back with Hans Finzel in just a minute.
This is your time, your moment, the birth of life, your golden, you've come so
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, interviewing Hans Menzel today, who's written a book called Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader. Leaders may be born, but they can also be made. And Hans has some great tips on ways that you can be an effective leader as well. You know, Hans, one of the things that I love to read about is that leaders need to be accessible, because sometimes we think about leaders in their big corner office and it's kind of scary to go there. And I remember feeling that way as a 20-something, not thinking that I had any right to be anywhere near my boss's office. But that doesn't really make for a great way to be an accessible leader, does it?
Not today. Leaders have to get out of their ivory tower and out of their corner offices, and they have to be out among the people. And today, more and more companies are going toward the cubicles for everybody, even the leader, and that's because of accessibility. I've been doing some studies. I'm actually writing a new book about boomers and millennials working well together. And I've been studying millennials, and they are going to be a bigger generation. They're going to be 82 million, bigger than the baby boom generation. We have to learn to integrate them into our work and to our workplace. And I've learned that every generation has a lower power distance between leader and follower. So the builder generation, you know, before the boomers, had a very big power distance between the leader and the follower. And then boomers a little less, and then Gen X a little less. And millennials, they have almost no power distance, meaning they will get in your face and they want to be shoulder to shoulder working with you. And sometimes older leaders take this as disrespectful. I can't believe they just said that to me right to my face. Or I can't believe they demand this kind of attention from me. Well, hey, get used to it. It's the way it is. And today's leaders have to, especially if you want to lead millennials effectively, you got to be accessible and vulnerable. I also talk in that chapter about vulnerability, and that's being willing to admit you're not perfect and not trying to pretend that you're perfect and that you have your act together. Vulnerability is a powerful force in leadership.
Mm. I remember I teach freshmen in college, and that would be this generation that we're talking about. And I remember a couple of my colleagues being shocked that I put my cell phone on the syllabus. And believe me, there were some nights when I regretted that. However, I found that it was a wonderful way to be, like you said, to be as accessible as I could be. And most of the students really did, they respected that. If I told them I had young children and had to go to bed, but just knowing that they could get me if they needed me, I guess, was something that was important. And that's definitely something that is generational.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great illustration. I teach adjunct courses in various grad schools around the country. And I was just recently teaching in Baltimore, Maryland, and I had 8 students. These were master's level. It was a 1-week intensive. And pretty well every day I had lunch with them. And they told me, you know, you're the first professor that hangs out with us for lunch every day. Hmm. Most of them, they just disappear and then come back after lunch. And they appreciated that accessibility. Yeah, I call it management by wandering around. You need to wander around and be available. Not always, but you need to be available for your people. Hmm. That's accessibility.
Well, and you write that Jesus was accessible too. So we're learning from a great leader there, aren't we?
We are, yes. He basically hung out with his team all the time and rarely went away to a lonely place by himself. And that's, again, today's leaders really need to work shoulder to shoulder with the followers and don't ask followers to do something you're not willing to do yourself.
It is sometimes hard to be vulnerable, though. I feel like I learned at some point in my life that being vulnerable was equal to being weak. Can you dispel that for us?
Yeah, that's absolutely a false myth. That's the old school approach. If I admit my weaknesses, people will think I'm weak. But I found, for example, it's hard for me to be vulnerable and to be open. And I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, and I had a real drama in my home, and so conflict was very painful for me. And I realized that's why I'm such a conflict avoider and why it's hard for people to get to know me. And what I just said to you I eventually told my team after I went to a counselor for a while, and they were delighted. They were like, oh, we just thought you were arrogant. But now we realize you really struggle with vulnerability. And guess what? They respected me so much more when I was vulnerable with them and opened my heart to them. You see, we think if I admit my weaknesses, people will think less of me, but it's the opposite. People think more of you because they have weaknesses, and they think, oh, you're only human. Mm-hmm. I like you because I'm human too. You know, that's vulnerability.
So do most leaders fail at their first attempts at this vulnerability, or is that something natural? Because, boy, it seems like it's going to take me a few different times.
I don't know the answer to that question, Jill. I think it depends on your personality. My wife is the total opposite of me. She's a wonderful people person. Vulnerability, I mean, she just wears her feelings on her sleeves. And I grew up in this cold German home where we didn't express our feelings. So I think it has a lot to do with your family upbringing and your personality. So for some people, it's easy.
Hmm. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about if you do fail the first time, how you need to be to continue to succeed. You write a lot about determination and perseverance. And when we come back on Connecting Faith for the second half of our program, I'm going to talk to Hans about that and also some other top 10 ways to be a great leader. Talking with Hans Finzel today. He does have a few of his books to give away, and we'd love to get that in your hands. Or maybe you know a leader who could use this. Maybe you could use it yourself. You can look at our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to submit your name and your contact information that way, and we'll make sure to get one of these books into your hands. We'll be back in a minute with Hans Finzel, the top 10 ways to be a great leader.
He started something good.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Well, today we're talking leadership with leadership expert Hans Finzel. He's the president of HD Leaders and has written a book, another book called Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader. Mistakes Leaders Make was one of the books that I remember, really the top 10 mistakes leaders make, was one of the ways I was first introduced to Hans. That's also another great book. In fact, Hans, I was telling you earlier before the show that I discussed that with some people that I was leading as well. What is one of the top mistakes that leaders seem to make that can really put them in a place where they're not leading well?
Well, the number one mistake I call the top-down attitude. And it's kind of the king of the mountain attitude where I'm on the top, I'm the most important, everybody serves me, and I'm going to dominate my team because I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. That's the top-down attitude. That's one of the biggest mistakes leaders make. Another one is dirty delegation, where they don't know how to people say, what does that mean? Well, clean delegation is you give a responsibility and you give the authority with the responsibility, and you don't have all these strings attached and you're not always looking over their shoulders. So dirty delegation is a big, big sin among a lot of leaders. They don't know how to delegate well.
So when you're writing about these top mistakes that leaders often make, did you make a few of those?
Oh, I made them all. I made at least 100, if not 200, but I only put the top 10 in the book. Because when I wrote that book, it was actually because I was working for a leader that frustrated me. He was a terrible boss. He was a great person, but a terrible boss. Very smart, but didn't know how to lead. And then born out of that failure was that book, because then I became the leader of our organization, and I said, God, I don't want to be that kind of leader that frustrates people. Help me to be the kind of leader that empowers and frees people up to do their best. And that's where I studied, what are the top mistakes that I need to make sure I avoid? That's how that book was born.
Well, this is forced vulnerability, Hans. You see, you have to be vulnerable if you're going to go on and do some radio interviews, don't you?
Well, you'll find my books are quite vulnerable. People always say, Hans, you're so vulnerable in your writing about leadership, about your own mistakes and your own setbacks. And yeah, that's me. It's not classroom theory. It's real life experience.
Well, we're so grateful for that, because I think you're right about that vulnerability. When you find out that someone who you thought could do nothing wrong is actually doing a few things and having a few failures, then you realize that the ones that you have are just a little bump along the road, and we're going to get there as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
So that brings me to the D in leadership, is for determination. And this is essential for someone who's in leadership, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good old-fashioned determination. And it's almost, again, we live in an instant-on society, instant gratification. You know, if somebody texts me, they want an answer immediately, you know? And so in an instant gratification, an instant always-on world, sometimes people forget that you need determination, and it's going to take some time to be successful, no matter what you're leading. And that's what this chapter is about. Hang in there, be faithful, work hard, and you will be successful. In fact, I think consistency is one of the greatest keys to success in any endeavor, to be consistent, and that's determination.
Well, one of the action points that you write about in that chapter on determination is to trust God. Can you tell me about how your faith has made an impact on your leadership?
Yeah, well, in fact, in those action points, the first thing I say is trust yourself. And a lot of people struggle with self-confidence, and I've had those struggles myself, where they don't believe in themselves. And they have all this negative stuff going on between their ears about themselves. So you have to learn to believe in yourself and trust yourself. And then secondly, I talk about, yeah, you got to trust God. And for me, my faith is a huge part of my whole story. And even though my parents, I think I mentioned earlier, I grew up in a tough home, a cold German home, and I've always struggled with feeling that God is kind of like my dad. Mm. My dad was absent, and so I have had to learn that God is present and God believes in me, and he believes in what I'm trying to accomplish. So my faith helps me keep going, because I know I have a loving Heavenly Father who believes in me and wants me to succeed, and has even promised I will succeed.
Mm.
Faithful is he who began a good work in you, and he will complete it. You know, I love that verse.
Oh, that's so great to just give ourselves a little bit of grace, because I think when you're in a position of leadership, you feel like there's not a lot of grace that's offered to you, but except by God.
That's so true. That's so true. Sometimes he's the only one who's on your side.
But that's a good one to have on our side. And I love what you said about trusting yourself as well, because sometimes we need to remind ourselves that that everyone is flawed, and that the flaws are going to come out, but that there's still hope.
Absolutely.
You know, another thing you write about under determination is that it's really important to be connected with a community of people who will keep you going. It seems like the higher you go up on the leadership rungs, the lonelier it gets. How do you account for that, and how do you help yourself in that?
Yeah, it is lonely at the top. You know, it's a famous saying, and it's true because it's harder to have good friends and within the organization because you are the leader, you are the boss. And I found I had to have really good friendships outside of work. And I have, I think I mentioned in that chapter, my lifelong friend, his name is Craig, and he's one of those people that we've been friends for 30 years, and we tell each other everything, what we're struggling with, what we're going through, our joys, our victories, our disappointments. Everybody needs a Craig. Everybody needs a friend outside of work that you can really relate to, because it is lonely at the top. And I found I couldn't really complain about my problems to my team because it would discourage them, and it sometimes just wasn't appropriate. I could complain to my board of directors, but ultimately I think you just need somebody outside of your work that you can really, really talk to.
Mm. Well, and those people seem to be those who can keep you going as well. And so aside from a determination, it kind of helps with that perseverance if you have people you know are cheering you on.
That's right. They believe in you, and sometimes they believe in you more than you believe in yourself. Mm. Those are the great people to have around you.
I need some more of those people. You can send some my way if you have any
okay.
extras.
All right.
Well, E, you say, is for effective communication. What's some poor ways that leaders use to communicate that might get them in a bit of a pickle?
Well, the biggest problem is I say never assume anybody knows anything. And one of the biggest problems that leaders have is they don't communicate. They think that somehow by the process of osmosis, people know what I'm thinking when they don't know what you're thinking. Or I was talking to somebody earlier today who said their leader every morning came into the office, walked right through all these people's doors and cubicles, never said one thing to anybody, went straight into their office and closed the door. Okay, that's zero communication on an impersonal level, I mean on an informal level or a formal level. So the biggest mistake that leaders can make about communication is not to communicate, because it's your job to let people know, kind of outline in this chapter what all you need to be communicating about: the big picture, current problems, current challenges, current developments. But if people are left in the dark and they don't know what's going on, they always go to the negative, and they think worse things are going on than really are going on. So a leader just has to communicate what's going on.
Well, I love the exercise that you outline in this chapter of giving everyone around the table a 3x5 index card and then asking them a question and then seeing if they are on the same wavelength that you are or that each other are on. And what a great way to have a discussion. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this actually happened when I was at a particular organization, and we were having a lot of problems, a lot of confusion about our purpose and direction. We actually had a consultant come in and pass around 3x5 cards to all the leadership team and said, write down on this card your purpose, the purpose for which you exist as an organization. And then he collected the cards and he read them, and every card said something different. We just were confused about what we were trying to accomplish and where we were going. So I think it's a great exercise to make sure everybody's on the same page. I'd say on the same page of the hymn book. You know, if you're all singing off the same page, then you have organizational clarity and you know where you're going. And it's the leader's job to make sure you have clarity and then constantly remind people of that, of where we're going and what our purpose is.
How does communication change when there's some sort of conflict that needs to be resolved? Are there some tips on how to best do that?
Well, a lot of people are conflict avoiders. I already mentioned I'm a conflict avoider. It goes back to my childhood and some of the pain that was going on in my home. So I don't like conflict, and I naturally avoid it. So the first problem, Joe, is people don't deal with it. They just think, oh, you know, it'll go away. Well, it never goes away. What happens when we avoid conflict? It gets worse. Okay, second thing I've learned is never try to resolve conflict through email. Have you ever tried to do that?
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It makes matters worse when you try to clarify something in a long email. oh man, I've been burned several times, and I learned if there is a conflict, talk to the people. Best to talk to them face to face, if at all possible, or on the telephone, or through Skype or something is even better, because email is so cold and impersonal, and you don't get all the nonverbal cues, you know. So those are a couple of tips on conflict resolution. You have to go into the danger zone, and it's your responsibility as a leader to deal with conflict and to have those tough conversations with the people that you need to have them with. That's great leadership.
You know, for more information on things like this or all of the elements that you have in your book, you mentioned that there are some podcasts that people can listen to on various subjects. And I find that just incredibly helpful for people who want more on a particular subject. Can you tell me a little bit about your website and how it's organized so that people could hear more from you?
Yeah, so it's hansfinzel.com. So if you can spell my name, you can find me. H-A-N-S. F-I-N-Z like zebra, E-L, hansfinzel.com. I have a number of videos. I have quite a few. I actually have a YouTube channel that I'm linked to there that have a lot of training videos you can watch. I also have on my website a section that has 75 podcasts, and they're about 25 minutes long, about the time of a typical commute to work. And you can listen to those, and I have them arranged by what the topics are. So if you're interested, say, delegation or emotional intelligence or conflict resolution, you can just listen to that program. And then also I have a contact tab. If you want to contact me, I actually read the emails and I answer them personally. If you want to have me speak at an event, I have a speaking page there. I have some samples of my speaking, and you can inquire about whether I could do a leadership talk for your event.
Hmm. Well, we'll have information and a link to Hans's site on our site as well at myfaithradio.com. And if you're listening today and you want to get one of his books into your hands, we have a few of those to give away as well. The most recent of Hans Finzel is Top 10 Ways to Be a Great Leader. He's got a wealth of information in here, and he also has several other books, of course, that he's written that would give you some information as well. But we'd love to get a book of this, one of these books in your hands. You can just go right to our website, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to submit your contact information that way. And we will be right back with Hans Finzel. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening this hour. We're talking leadership today with leadership expert Hans Finzel. And Hans, one of the things that leaders might often feel is, boy, I've had enough of this and it's time for me to quit. But you say that resilience is really important as far as leadership goes. Talk more about why resilience is really what's going to get you through.
Yeah, resilience, the R in leadership stands for resilience. I call it sponginess. It's really kind of like the ability to bounce back. When I was a kid, one of my favorite toys was a Slinky. Everybody knows what a Slinky is. In fact, I saved the best toys that my kids grew up with, and now my grandkids are playing with those toys. The best toys have no batteries, but a Slinky is very flexible. And resilience is being soft in spirit, not rigid, like a young, flexible tree that bends when the winds blow. And tough things happen in life, and so you have to learn to be flexible. That's what resilience is, because you will fall flat on your face. And the question is, what's going to happen when you fall flat on your face? Are you going to get up and dust yourself off and keep going, or are you going to quit, or are you going to snap? And so that's resilience.
Well, it is tempting to just be able to walk away, but that becomes increasingly more difficult the more you move up that leadership ladder, doesn't it?
It is. It's you just In fact, I used to do a lot of work with missionaries, and I always told young missionaries when I was training them before they went overseas, I said, the key to being an effective missionary is resilience, the ability to bounce back, because things will not go the way you've planned them to go, and your experience will be very different, and if you can just develop a resilient spirit, you'll do great.
Mm.
I call resilience, I'm just going to read a little bit from this chapter. Resilience is our capacity to bounce back from difficulties, disappointments, heartbreak, and hard times. And that's resilience.
Because we really are setting ourselves up for failure, aren't we, if we think that everything is going to go according to plan?
We do. Because life is filled with right turns and left turns that are unexpected. And things will not turn out the way you think they will. And if you're resilient and you trust God in the process, you'll be fine.
Well, one of the things that that you say is teachable, and I hope that it is this concept of being a servant leader, not someone who people can walk all over, but someone who has the heart of a true servant. Can you explain how those two things are different?
Yeah, a servant leader, here's my definition of a servant leader. When the leader cares more about the good of the team than his or her own enrichment. Because the opposite of servant leadership is selfish leadership. It's all about me, it's my goals, my career, my success. And servant leadership is just an attitude that everybody's important. And if the team succeeds, I succeed. It's not about me, it's about we. That's about as simple as I can put it, servant leadership. One of the most, I had the chance to travel the world for most of my career. I've been to over 100 countries, just some fascinating experiences through my career. And I met Mother Teresa in Calcutta, India in 1994 at her compound there in Calcutta. And it's one of the most amazing people I ever met. And she's, to me, a great example of servant leadership. You know, she won the Nobel Prize for her ministry among the poor. And she's a great example of a person that didn't have natural leadership abilities, but talk about influence. And she was a true servant leader. And the 10 minutes that I had a personal audience with her, guess what we talked about? We talked about me. We didn't talk about her and her accomplishments. So that's, to me, servant leadership. It's an attitude that I'm not the most important person in the room.
Well, and how does Scripture, how does your faith direct you to be that type of servant leader?
Well, honestly, the best model of servant leadership is found in the New Testament, the book of John, chapter 13. The night before Jesus was crucified, he washed the disciples' feet. To me, that's the model of servant leadership. He was not a weak leader. He was not milquetoast. He didn't let people take advantage of him. But the night before the crucifixion, he washed all of his team's feet. And he said, you know, if I, your Lord and Master, wash your feet, you should wash one another's feet. What was he getting at? Serving one another. It's not just about me, it's about we. So to me, he's my greatest example of how to be a servant leader.
Mm. Well, and an example that we can all live by, no matter if we are the person being served or the person doing the serving. That's a great example for leaders. And must be something that you need to constantly be reminding people of. I'm guessing you write about that on virtually every leadership book that you've authored.
I do. Servant leadership is so important. So I do. It's one of my main teaching points is be a servant leader. And again, some people think that's weakness. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's an attitude of that. And it also goes back to that whole issue of humility, which we'll touch on in the last chapter. It's having a humble spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as we are kind of running a little bit low on time, but I don't want to skip humility, and I for sure don't want to skip integrity. There are ways to kind of ruin your reputation as a leader, aren't there?
Totally. You know, the I in leadership stands for integrity, and it's almost self-explanatory, but people won't trust or respect leaders that are not honest or don't keep their word or are actually you know, steal from the company or dishonest with their expense reports or say things that aren't true, they're not truthful, all those kind of things will negate your integrity and therefore people will not respect you or follow you. It's just a really important piece of effective leadership.
And if someone has lost their integrity, it's very difficult to get that back, isn't it?
It's very hard once the glass is broken to repair it, yes. Once there's broken glass all over the floor and trust has been lost, you know, I tell leaders, if you've broken the trust of your people, you might as well move on to another place, because putting it back together, I've seen it happen a couple of times, but it's nigh to impossible.
Well, and one of the last things you write about is just how important it is for leaders to be humble. Can you talk a little bit about that, maybe share a personal experience that you've had with humility?
Yeah, the power of humility. The P in leadership stands for the power of humility. When I was a young man in my 30s, I was kind of arrogant. I admit it. I was full of myself. I thought I was God's gift to the world. And my leadership team, this is not the experience I spoke about earlier in the show. That happened much later in my career. But this experience happened early in my career where my team came to me and said, we don't want you to be our leader anymore. We're going to appoint somebody else. And I said, what? Why? And they said, Hans, you don't care about us. You know, it's just all about your career, your ambitions, your program. You're really smart. You're really gifted. And you do a lot of stuff really well. But you don't love us. You don't care about us. And it was crushing. It was a crushing defeat as a young man. But I needed it. I needed to be sifted and I needed to become more humble. So that's where I learned the power of humility. Because if you're humble, you really realize it is not about me. It's about the team, and it's about others, and it's about what Philippians 2 says. Don't merely look out for your own personal interest, but also the interests of others. So that's the power of humility.
Mm. Well, and I love that you write under the action steps, do you have the blessing of being highly talented and gifted? It's okay. You can admit it. But you say along with understanding what you're gifted in, it's important to still be humble about it and allow your team to find out what they're gifted in.
That's right. That's right.
And sometimes we get into positions of leadership where we're not really sure what to do, but it seems like you've created some very simple ways that we can learn a little bit more about ourselves, our personalities, and some ways that we can become a great leader. Do you have any last advice to offer for those who have maybe found themselves in that position where they're not sure where to go from there?
Yeah, well, I would love for them to pick up this book, mm-hmm. and I've given a good on-ramp to leadership in these 10 chapters, and I think, as you know, you've been reading it, it's very practical. At the end of every chapter, I have action steps and discussion items. I think it's a great book to read as a group, maybe over lunch, have a book club over lunch and discuss the chapters. So, yeah, get the book. It's a great instruction guide, 10 essential skills, especially every new leader should master. But really, it's for anybody in leadership.
Well, Hans Finzel, thank you so much for writing not only this book, but your other works as well, and giving us some practical ways to become a great leader. The top 10 ways to be a great leader, that's Hans Finzel. Thanks so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith, and blessings as you continue to teach people to lead well.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you having me on the program very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith today. Have a wonderful day.